Johnny, everything's coming up rosy.
It's 10 minutes after 12. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and everything is coming up roses. John and Jerry is on a phone line. John, how about that? Everything is coming up roses. The Dow in 7 days goes past 26. Now, it's given up a lot of its gain, but past the 26,000 mark earlier today, everything is looking sunny, rosy, shiny.
Whenever you've got Ethel Merman and any excuse to play Ethel Merman.
I'm so glad you were around to hear that.
Fantastic.
I thought of that this morning. I'm like, I'm going to play that for Nigerian's intro.
I love it. Thank you.
How about it, though? I mean, everything is looking really good. The traders looks like they couldn't wait to get back after the King holiday. I mean, things just charged at the start. And while they're not where they were earlier today, it looks like it's going to be another good day on Wall Street.
Yeah, it does. Citigroup came out and said that they thought it was the best macro environment that they'd seen in years. That's a quote from their earnings this morning. I think the only reason you had the give back in the market, as you noted, we traded through 26,000 earlier. We're still at 25,921, but we're easily about 130 points lower than where we were at the peak. And I think a lot of that was the subpoena that was issued to former Trump aide, Mr. Bannon.
Yeah, Bannon is
seemingly.
I was going to say Bannon's before a House committee this morning or today. And while he was there on Capitol Hill, New York Times reporting that the Mueller team has subpoenaed him, which is significant because the other White House aides who've testified have gone over there willingly. This is the first sort of inner circle guy who's been subpoenaed.
Yes, sir. And so still not really any closer to the president himself, especially since this is an ousted member of his administration. But certainly people will be interested to see exactly how aggressively he goes after the president. In his testimony.
What happens if he gets him? And by that I mean, you know, the Dow and Wall Street certainly has soared under President Trump by his easing of regulations, by his tax cuts and all of that. Are you telling me that the continued success is threatened if President Trump is gone?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I'm saying that the feeling in the market that was almost euphoric this morning was met by that dose of reality, if you will, that, there still could be things out there that could not so much derail it, Steve, but
right.
Could, you know, cause people not to commit capital at record high after record high after record high.
Listen, over the weekend, I was putting together my calendar for the upcoming year, and I want to schedule in. Do you know when the correction is going to be? I'm just want to put the...
I'll give it to you, and you can post it up on the WGN website. How about that?
Well, I know you are pretty optimistic. Will there be one in 2018?
I'm sure there will.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be a full 10% correction like the kind that we normally refer to when we speak of a correction, but I think until you see a correction that gets to that level, we're just going to keep trading higher. In other words, if every dip is a buying opportunity and the buy on the dip mentality is certainly alive and well, just saw it again last week, then I think we're not really going down until one of those buy on the dips fails.
You are, I think, still on the set of the halftime report at CNBC right now. Earlier today, Sam Zell was on CNBC and he borrowed a term. He said that he sees irrational exuberance in the stock market. He's holding cash. What did you make of Zell's appearance on your network?
I think he's a very smart man and obviously a very rich man. But I think he missed most of the run in the market for the last 6 or 7 years. And he did so mainly because he thought he really took Blackstone and blindfolded them and basically emptied their pockets. And it turns out Blackstone emptied his, that their purchase of Equity Office Properties, EOP, which was his company, they made nearly 3 or 4 times their money on that purchase. And so I think Mr. Zell has sort of that seller's regret that many people have when they've experienced things similar to that. Is it irrational exuberance? Well, you just basically gave most of the corporations in the United States a very significant tax cut. Some, obviously, it's not as big of a tax cut because they're so much of their burden was already held overseas. But for all the domestics that were paying the full 35% tax rate, dropping down to 21 is a mess. You start factoring that in, you can see why people justify, you know, a 26,000 Dow or S&P 500 over 2,700.
I want to get to United Health and Merck and the movers today, but before we do, we were talking about President Trump and government. So, I don't put much stock in the idea of a government shutdown coming on Friday, but if there is, what impact do you think that might have on Wall Street?
It would be surprise and shock if we had that, because right now their reading is from both parties that neither side really has the belly for it. On the other hand, to your point, if it did happen, and that's the question you posed, I think that you would see a pretty negative reaction in the market, not because closing the government for a few days is so bad, but just the idea that things have gotten so partisan that they can't get anything done, even an extension. They're not going to negotiate probably a new regime of how they're going to spend, but they can't even extend the debt that they've already got. That would be viewed as pretty negative.
All right, who are the big movers today? I mentioned United Health and Merck, right? Are they leading the pack?
They certainly are. But I'd say Citigroup's numbers were very strong, coming on the heels of J.P. Morgan and Wells Fargo last week. We were buying more of that pipeline place, KMI, Kinder Morgan. We were buying more of that today. We were also buying more UPS, as we think that the better and the upgrade to Amazon will ultimately help many of the package delivery companies because of their business, Amazon's, that is, being so strong.
How is Facebook doing today? I ask because, you know, we've talked a lot on this show about the pressure on social media companies to look out for a little more mental health issues. Facebook seemed to take some steps in that direction last week, and their stock suffered on Friday. How are they doing today?
Well, let me take a quick look because that wasn't one that I was trading, but I'm pulling it up. No, that's all right. Let's see. Boom, 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 boom. Facebook, I'm hoping it pops up quickly, but no, it's not coming up. Sorry, I didn't have that keyed up in the system. So,
that was my fault for throwing you a curve there.
I've been staying away from it. No, that's quite all right. I should normally have them, but just didn't have that one up on the screen.
You've been staying away? Why?
Well, I think that privacy issues over in Europe, as well as what Zuckerberg did last week, mean that it's not a don't touch, but a let's be really careful and wait a little bit and maybe try to get a 10% correction before we buy back in. We've been a big believer. We took profits as it traded to this new record high, and we'd rather be buying it in the 160s than where it is right here.
All right, that's John Najarian. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, sir.
It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, later in the show, in the second half hour, we're going to go to Wisconsin and talk to the people at the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. I think it's the government entity that they're trying to poach our millennials and bring them up north.
Nice.
With the ad campaigns. But right now, Suzanne Muchin is in the studio, the co-host of the Big Payoff podcast
that
you can listen to at WGNradio.com. It would be if I listened to podcasts. No, actually, The Mincing Rascals is my favorite.
You know what? Mine, too.
Is it good?
Yeah.
You're making that up. Okay, we have a lot to talk about, a little bit of time. I think the whole Mark Wahlberg, Michelle Williams, let me just frame it. You tell me if I'm wrong.
Sure.
So they wanted to cut Spacey out of this movie, All the Money in the World.
Right.
So they called the actors back for a reshoot. And I think it was in Italy. And Wahlberg said, I'll do it for $1.5 million. Michelle Williams didn't realize other people were getting more money, so she was paid her per diem of $80 in lunch money, basically.
Right.
Word comes out, Wahlberg is blasted and then shamed into donating not just the 1.5.
Well, now you're starting to put your spin on it.
To make good.
Now we're off the facts.
To make good, he donates not just the $1.5 million he made extra, but another $500,000 to the
To a group that's trying to address the wage gap.
I can never think of the name of the group.
You know what? They're trying to address wage gap in Hollywood and all that. I find your spin on it fascinating.
I will posit.
Yes, please.
That Mark Wahlberg is a victim here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't like Mark Wahlberg.
Fascinating take, Steve.
I don't especially like him. I don't care for his movies.
Remember the Marky Mark with him in the underpants in that whole era?
Boogie Nights was a good movie.
Yeah, right?
But all he did was... Although he might be a jag, I don't know. Maybe he was holding the movie hostage, I don't know. But he held out to get the most money he can get. Some women on TV call that the Know Your Value movement. He got it. Michelle Williams didn't do that. I don't know if I fault her or her agent, but I don't fault Mark Wahlberg.
I don't fault him either, but I would not say he's a victim. So let's just rewind the tape a second. This was definitely not, you and I both know, Mark and Michelle. This is agents talking to other agents and booking them, you know, according to whatever contract they can get for the most amount of money. So let's not say, I don't believe it was personal. I don't believe he scammed anyone or she was silly. But here's what I do think. Once it was exposed that there was this very large disconnect between what he was being paid and what she was being paid, now we have a higher altitude conversation about what's fair. Not who, like, did the right thing on a contract, but really what's fair in Hollywood.
Does unfairness come to play here? Because we don't know.
We don't know a lot of things, but what I do know is two people doing an equal job. They both went there to redo a film shoot. Okay,
right.
Technically what they're there to do is the same.
Right.
Should be paid an equal amount.
But my point is, I don't know if it applies to the issue of equal pay, because had she held out...
I don't think she... What I've read is she didn't even know there was anything to hold out for.
I understand. But had she held out and then they refused to give her the money but they gave it to Wahlberg, then there's a... equal pay issue. But if she never even challenged it, I just think it doesn't quite fit. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. Okay. I don't know that we know she didn't challenge it. I also don't know that she had the information to even know. And again, this is what I've read. She didn't even believe there was money on the table. It was just part of the normal course of
business. Which her agent should have put
in play. Her agent should have. Now, we don't know if her agent's a female, a male. So let's take that off the table. Here's where I do disagree with you. I don't believe he's a victim, but I also don't think he's a hero. I think the whole, you know, press and even Michelle thanking him, you're such a wonderful guy. He doesn't get to be a hero now because he donated money to
he got shamed into it.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't make him a hero. And also it makes her, in my opinion, look weak that she had to come out with a statement saying what an awesome person he is.
It's all messy. We're in a messy time.
Messy times.
Aziz Ansari.
Oh, God. Are we really going here?
So the Atlantic Monthly writes an essay. A woman writes an essay about Ansari being accused, and she called it revenge porn on the part of the woman.
New York Times Today also had an article, an op-ed on it.
Yeah.
To me, it was a huge setback for the Me Too movement. Just a huge setback. I don't believe that we should be conflating the kind of behavior. I'm not supporting it or saying it was pretty to read.
Right.
But that behavior where he didn't have any control over her job, he wasn't saying, and if you don't do this, then I'm going to do X, Y, and Z with your job. It wasn't illegal from, it wasn't, I think I can say this word, it wasn't rape. To conflate that with what Harvey Weinstein did is insane. And if this is now where the movement's going to go, that anyone can just fully take down a human being in the press for that kind of an experience, I find it disempowering to women.
It also, I don't know anything about this babe.com or whatever the website is. It was graphic.
It was graphic
in a way that embarrasses his private moments, which is too bad.
And again, it doesn't need to be that the flip side of the story is that he's amazing, but let's not conflate what happened there with the sexual harassment issue that is so very serious for so many women.
It's we've got 30 seconds.
Oh, man.
Can I see you soon on a makeup box? What's going on with that?
Right. So CVS, across the street from here, is taking away all photoshopping from their ads. I say, meh. Like, of the top three issues we should be concerned with right now in terms of women in the workforce, wage equality, sexual harassment, gender diversity, and leadership. Photoshopping, I would put down at about number 10.
At least they're doing something.
No, really? I would so much have rather them come out and said, look, in addition to doing this, we're also going to have equality by 2020 in terms of our board leadership or something.
I'm sorry we don't have more time about it, because I also wonder if women really think that they're supposed to, like men, I'm not going to look like that guy on the hair.
No, they're still models. They've still had their hair done. They still had their makeup professionally done. Come on.
Suzanne Buchan, check out more at The Big Payoff, WGNRadio.com. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's 12:38 on the Wintrust Business Lunch in Chicago, WGN Radio. We're sitting right along Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Okay, how's your credit score? Do you know what your credit score is? You know how to find out? If it's lower than you'd like or lower than you think it should be, do you know how to fix it? A little bit later in the program, we will be talking to Anthony Davenport. He's the author of a book called Your Score. He's an expert when it comes to credit scores and reports and all things like that. So we'll kick that around a little bit later in the show. Right now, the tagline of the new ad campaign is Wisconsin, it's more you. The people in Wisconsin are trying to poach our millennials. And, we just happen to have the chief poacher on a phone line now. Tricia Braun is from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, the VP there. Tricia, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi. Good afternoon, Steve.
Was it unfair to call you a poacher?
No, it chuckled. We think of it more as promoting Wisconsin as opposed to poaching necessarily.
All right, tell me about it. $1 million you're spending, and you're trying to get millennials who live in the Chicago area, specifically it looks like the north side, to move a little bit further north, up to Milwaukee or elsewhere in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, it's no secret that states are competing pretty heavily for talent these days, and Wisconsin's no different. And looking at where we feel we can make an impact. Our data shows that one of our challenges, as Wisconsin's challenges, is that there's kind of a limited perception of the opportunities that we have here in the state. You know, the majority of folks outside of Wisconsin think of beer, cheese, and Packer football. And so what we really want to do first is just change that idea that, that's all that Wisconsin offers, because we have such a diverse mix of industries, great communities, large and small across the state. And so it's telling that story. And then, focusing on an area that has a high concentration of millennials, particularly because they are, more apt to move for a career or a life family. So, obviously Chicago's proximity to Wisconsin also offers a benefit to us. And as, people are moving outside of the state, we'd rather keep them here in the Midwest than see them go to places like Texas or Georgia, which, studies show is where they're moving to.
So we shouldn't feel quite so bad because you're going to keep our millennials close?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Good luck with that one. Bass fishing and all of that is nice, and the Packers are great. I do love Wisconsin, but it would seem to me that it would be jobs that would bring them north rather than the allure of a shorter commute.
Are the jobs there? The jobs are not only here, but they're here in pretty much every region of the state in the industries that you would think of when you think of what opportunities are in Chicago. We also have those here in Wisconsin, and a growing number of them. And the wage differences aren't as significant as some may think. And in fact, with the lower cost of living, your dollar actually goes quite a bit farther.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the campaign. You're focusing on L cars and coasters and bars, or how are you spending the money?
It's a mix of media in looking at where folks in that kind of age range are focusing. It's social media. It's the YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Facebook might even be on the older end of it. But, just kind of trying to hit that, our Pandora or Spotify ads, as well as places where they commute, whether they're living in the city and just going from one end of downtown to the other, or actually commuting in, trying to put that message in front of them.
It looks like you're focusing on the north side. Is that fair to say?
Honestly, I think that marketing, they just said we wanted a train that goes through downtown that will see a lot of visitors, and we didn't have any preference or say in it. That's just what they said this would be.
It's not an accusation. I mean, the millennial soup is thickest in Wicker Park and along the purple and the brown line. So I mean, it would make perfect sense. It just looks like that's where you're focusing. That's all. Okay. So here's another thing. We did a show up from Libertyville in Lake County a few weeks ago, and I was talking to a director. It probably is the guy who's got your job, but for Lake County, a partnership between business and private industry and all of that, and he boosts Lake County. I was talking to him about the big Foxconn plant going into southern Wisconsin, and he wasn't that bothered by it because he thinks there's going to be a lot of millennials or other people living in northern Illinois and commuting north. He thinks those jobs are going to go to Illinoisans because he says Illinois has a much richer job pool, worker pool, than does Wisconsin. How do you counter that?
Now, I think Foxconn in general is good for the Midwest. And obviously here in Wisconsin, we will benefit from it greatly, not just in the Kenosha Racine area, but throughout the state as there are technologies or businesses that spur off of the investment. And, you know, will Northern Illinois benefit? Yes, I think so. Do I think eventually some of those employees that maybe currently live in Illinois will want to move to Wisconsin for shorter commute times? We anticipate that as well. But I think overall the message is this is good for the Midwest.
He says, though, that Illinois' talent pool is much deeper than Wisconsin's. I mean, maybe you're...
I don't necessarily know about that. Well, I think that Illinois, obviously Chicago, too, has a higher population.
Right.
And, you know, as you draw, a lot of times after students graduate from college, they want that urban experience, and so there's that draw to Chicago. But I think, you know, Milwaukee offers a lot of the same kind of urban experience, and eventually people, they maybe want something a little bit different, a little, you know, bigger backyard, so to speak.
Yeah. And look, I mean, you're right. There are a lot more people here, so the number of fish in our pool is greater. And you are acknowledging that by advertising here to get them there. I love Wisconsin. I went to Marquette. I'm going to spend my birthday night. We're going to do an overnight in Milwaukee. I'm a big fan. But do you feel, is there any ick factor in that you're trying to take from one group or one population to help your own?
No, I think what it is you have, in Chicago, you're drawing people from all over the world, right? When people want to move for a job opportunity, go somewhere after college. And so it's a market that I think lends itself well to Wisconsin, you know, because they've lived in the Midwest, they have a relationship here. And so keeping in the Midwest, I think, actually benefits us all. But
okay.
It's our job to help our companies, and our companies need people. So
tell me, if our people go up and become your people, and it works, it looks like there's already plans in the work to expand this to the Twin Cities or elsewhere to try to bring in more millennials, right? What's the future hold for this?
Yeah, and not just millennials. I mean, when we say millennials, it's because they are the ones that are more apt to move. But it's really anyone that would be in the workforce or potential workforce. Another arm of this campaign is we're going to be doing a heavier recruitment for transitioning veterans and their families as they're looking to leave their military career and go back to civilian life. You know, we think there are great opportunities for here in Wisconsin, so we'll be doing some direct outreach as well.
You know, during Lent, the Catholic Church often puts up ads where they try to get fallen Catholics to come back home. And you guys are looking at kind of doing that too, aren't you? You're trying to bring Wisconsinites back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, and it's we haven't really ever done something like this before as a state, whether, you know, bragging about who we are, about the opportunities that are here. And, you know, it's not really done us any favors. So we're kind of changing our tune and singing our praises a little bit louder.
What would you call a fallen Wisconsinite? Any ideas?
And, you know, I think anyone really that's just moved away, whether it was because they returned back to where they came from after college, if they've gone to school here, or they moved away for a career opportunity, or even just to experience a different part of the country or world, we still think that there's a connection there to be made with Wisconsin and hope that, you know, they consider moving back here.
Well, I do think it's a great part of the country. I genuinely love Wisconsin. I'm not sure I like the idea of you trying to hurt us to help yourself, but that's we're all in the same game, right? That's just the way things work.
That is true.
Tricia Braun, the vice president at the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Oh, you know, I'd love to check back with you to see if, I don't know how you're going to measure success or when you might think you will come to success. Any idea of that? I mean, when you're going to know whether or not this campaign worked?
Well, we'll obviously be monitoring all of the kind of the web activity, social media activity, et cetera. So we'll have some good metrics from that perspective. I think in a more near term, we'll go back and we'll maybe do some perception testing and research on that again. But ultimately, the goal is to increase the in-migration numbers, whether it's coming from Chicago or if people have visited Chicago and saw the Wisconsin message and that kind of plays into it. But obviously, the ultimate goal is more people.
All right. Well, good luck. Keep us posted. And don't forget to plug the supper clubs. Ain't nothing wrong with the supper club.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. Yep.
Thanks very much, Ori and Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1252 on a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line is Anthony Davenport. He's the author of Your Score about credit reports. And here's the thing. It seems to me, even though I know your credit score, your credit report is supposed to reflect what you've done, so it's your activity that leads to it. It seems to me a lot of times that the credit score we feel like is something that is done to us. It's imposed on us regardless of what we do. That might be a weird way of looking about it, but we'll talk to Anthony about that. Anthony, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
All right, how about that? The idea that the credit score is something that's done to you rather than something you do to the report. Does that make any sense at all?
That's a really accurate way of looking at it because we don't ever go to these companies and the credit bureaus and tell them, hey, I'd like you to collect that on me. I want you to slice and dice it and sell it and do with it as you see fit. And then to tell me what kind of rates I can get on things. But that's exactly what happens. They collect data on us, they sell it, and we don't have a lot of say over what they do with it, how they protect it, and, you know, how it's being used to judge us.
Is it an accurate way to measure how great of a risk we are?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, most people are surprised to find that over half of our business in my credit management business comes from, you know, ultra high net worth individuals, professional athletes, entertainers, people that are not a risk to not pay something back. But the real issue comes from the fact that credit scores are now used to determine how much you pay for everything, not just your mortgage and your car loan and your credit cards, but also employers are looking at credit, 70% of them are, and even auto and home insurance policies are now being dictated by your credit score.
Explain that for me.
You don't have a lot of.
So, I mean, say I'm going for a car loan, and we'll go to the office in a minute, but say I'm going for a car loan and I apply, they look at my credit score. Do they break it down by a percentage interest rate for good credit and an interest rate for questionable credit? Or is it sort of a sliding scale that, I mean, it's more nuanced that way?
Yeah, it's a good question because when the recession happened, the banks used that as an excuse to do what's called risk-based pricing. And so what that means is now, if you have an immaculate credit score, you get one rate, but then every 20 points, they give you a worse rate or a worse adjustment. So you can have pretty good credit, like, you know, the average American has about a 700 score, but you're going to pay an extra several hundred thousand dollars over your lifetime in interest just because you'll have immaculate credit now because of this risk-based price.
All right, how do we change that? What do we do to make our credit report a little more reflective of our risk value?
So among the things that we cover in the book, one of them is that you have to start by getting an accurate credit report. The credit reports that you can get as a consumer from even Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, those are garbage. The credit bureaus paid fines of $25 million last year. Kind of got lost in the hubbub of the Equifax hack for falsely advertising that the credit reports they were giving consumers were the same as the lending institutions use. So, you know, we covered a few tactics on how to get the real report and then how to read it because it looks nothing like what you can get as a consumer.
So do you not suggest that we get those reports from Equifax or where else?
I really don't, especially if you're looking to get or obtain credit in the next year, you can use those as like a starting point, but you have to understand that that's not what a lending institution is going to look at. So you really should at least once a year get access to the real report, know how to read it. And then one thing that throws people off when they get it is that, you know, that people will assume, hey, I pay my bills on time. I'm a responsible person. Only 35% of your credit score, Steve, comes down to whether you pay your bills on time. The other 65% we cover extensively because that's what people can control. And it has nothing to do with whether you pay your bills on time.
All right. Check out the book. It's called Your Score, Credit Score, Your Score, An Insider's Secrets to Understanding, Controlling, and Protecting Your Credit Score, written by the Anthony Davenport. And it's a complicated topic. I know there's a lot. I hope we can talk again about this sometime soon.
We'd love to do that, Steve.